Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of In the Eyes of Truth. And with us today is Scott Ritter. And no, Scott does not need an introduction. If you don't know Scott Ritter by now, you have been living underwater somewhere. Scott, welcome back. And the topic of the day, of course, is the resounding success of Donald Trump's trip to China, where the Chinese are going to buy 200 something Boeings, or so he stated before he left. What can you say to that?
Right then. Where does one relocate properly? Desert? 40 degrees? No water? Forests? Rivers? Four seasons? Desert? 40 degrees? No water? Forests? Rivers? Four seasons?
It's actually much simpler than most people think.
Good Lord, that's less paperwork than a gym membership.
As a British man, I chose the place where I can still complain about the weather properly.
All right, let's head that way. Sounds good, I'm ready.
Move to Russia. Start a new life. It's easier with Moscow Connect. Website for details, moscowconnect.ru.
Hello, dear friends. Just want to remind you, if you like this video, or you like what you hear, click like, subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet, send it to your friends. Let's grow this channel. Maybe we can finally hit it up to 100,000. That'd be a good round number for the summer. So let me know, leave some comments, and give a thumbs up. So look forward to seeing you in the next video. Cheers.
That from the landing to the end.
I mean, look. This is not the trip Donald Trump was planning on taking to China. That trip was supposed to happen last month.
Right.
That trip, he was supposed to be bringing the severed heads of Venezuela and Iran and throwing them on the table in front of Xi Jinping, and declaring that the United States controlled the energy flow into China, and that the United States would be willing to, you know, allow China access to this energy if China were to make concessions on A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, J, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. You know, that didn't happen because of Iran and the inability of the United States to prevail militarily, you know, in Iran. So this is a different trip. You know, the United States, the Trump administration is, you know, playing this up as a big friendship trip. I think that's the theme. We're best buddies. Yeah. We're best. You know, we're here to do business. You can trust us. We're good. You know, Sergey Lavrov has declared, and I agree with him, the United States is agreement incapable. Yeah. You can't trust anything the United States says or does. I had to wonder what was going through Xi Jinping's mind as he walked down the line of American officials and were shaking their hands, knowing that each one of them is plotting against him as he speak. With or without the direct knowledge of the president of the United States. And I also had to wonder, you know, if Xi Jinping understood that the president doesn't comprehend half of what Xi Jinping is saying, that the president is incapable of comprehension, let alone making an agreement. You know, this is a political exercise. It's being spun as a great success in the United States, but it's pointed out, words are meaningless. What are needed are agreements. The United States is agreement incapable, and we even lie about agreements. 200 Boeings, there is no agreement for 200 Boeings. You know, have you seen the contract? I haven't seen the contract. I don't think anybody's seen the contract. Boeing certainly hasn't seen the contract. And this comes on the heels of China signing a major contract with Airbus. So it doesn't mean that you can't have both Airbus and Boeing aircraft in your fleet. I'm just saying that the Chinese airlines that needed aircraft signed contracts with Airbus. They didn't sign contracts with Boeing. So who knows what's going on? The president desperately needs something to happen with China. The other thing that emerged is the absolute dominance China has over the Taiwan discussion. You know, China set the tone, and the United States echoed the tone. You know, Marco Rubio's statements about the inevitability of Taiwan becoming part of China, you know, sort of resonates. And it's, I think it's a reflection of the fact that the United States is not the power that it thought it was. I mean, you know, I think we'll talk in a minute about, you know, Admiral Cooper's testimony to Congress. But the bottom line is, you know, we entered the Iran conflict with certain perceptions. Some analysts, I believe you and myself included, I believe these perceptions were overhyped, that the American capabilities didn't match the pronouncements, but it was still hypothetical. We didn't know for certain. Today, there can be no doubt about it. We know what the limitations of the United States are when it comes to power projection at a strategic level using conventional munitions. You know, in Taiwan now is no longer, I mean, there can literally be no debate about what the outcome of a major nation conflict over Taiwan would be. It would be a decisive Chinese victory and an absolute defeat of the United States. You know, for if no other reason, we'll run out of ammunition about day three. You know, but then the other question is, does our ammunition even work? So this is a game changer, but not just for Taiwan. It's a game changer for Japan and North Korea. You know, Japan and North Korea, South Korea, well, North Korea as well, indirectly. Japan and South Korea, you know, signed this tripartite agreement with the United States, this big defensive alliance that was supposed to contain North Korea and put the fear of God into them. Well, a couple things. One, North Korea, seeing what we did in Venezuela and what we tried to do in Iran, has passed a law that says if Kim Jong-un is taken out, a regime change, they will automatically, it's a dead hand version, their version of, they would just launch everything at everybody and kill the world, you know, including the United States, Japan. And, you know, one could have said, well, maybe our ballistic missile defense systems will protect us. We now know they won't. So, that takes
good
a lot
testing
of,
ground.
Japan had it built a lot of its aggressive posture towards North Korea based upon the premise of having a viable counterstrike capability. 400 Tomahawk Block 4s were being procured. In the United States, it's put Japan on notice that, no, those are ours now because we have to replenish, you know, what we expended. So Japan's looking at the very foundation of their defense posture towards North Korea being undermined by the United States. Both Japan and South Korea were operating under the premise that there would be an American ballistic missile defense shield over both nations. The United States deployed a couple THAAD radars and launch units into South Korea. We stripped those away without even coordinating with the South Koreans to bring them to the East. Japan lost some PAC-3 Patriot batteries. Again, without coordination, they're just gone. So those two nations have to be sitting there saying, what good is the United States? Remember, this is all done in China's backyard. AUKUS, Australia, UK, US, that little tripartite submarine-based agreement that was going on. I mean, Australia is sitting there looking at one of the biggest energy crises they've had, a collapse of their economy, with no submarine in sight.
Did they get any submarines yet?
They've got nothing. That
That's hard.
Nor are they going to, probably, because with the reallocation of priorities to America, foreign contracts are going to be put on the back burner. The UK, I don't think the UK and the US are on talking terms right now. I mean, you know, yes, the king visited, but that's about it. And you know, the UK just came out there. I think somebody in their defense bureaucracy has stated that the United Kingdom is not able to buy any new equipment until 2030. They just can't afford it. There's nothing there. So, you know, there goes that Quad. You know, again, the Quad is India, Australia, Japan, the United States. India, I mean, they hosted a foreign minister's gathering in India for BRICS. And it's becoming clear to India now that the United States isn't. I mean, India, you know, one of the statements made at BRICS is that BRICS is not intending to turn its back on the West. Fine. I mean, but India's, you know, the BRICS is in the business of serving as a stepping stool for the West either.
Right.
But Russia and India have indicated that they're going to stop using dollars as payment. They're going to be seeking other currency. This is the reality of the world. So, you know, and China is a major player in BRICS. And India has to be looking at the way that China is dominating the United States across the board. So, you know, the Quad is gone. So basically the entire security infrastructure the United States was putting in place in the Pacific to contain and constrain China is gone, finished. And yet Donald Trump shows up in China as if the United States has, you know, cards in the game. I have to give this to Xi Jinping. He was very receptive, very polite. The Chinese, you know, did everything right. They listened, as good intelligence officers should, and they did very little projection, as good intelligence officers should. Their job was to collect intelligence on the United States. I mean, the United States is a big unknown quantity, especially with the chaos that's ongoing in the Middle East.
Right.
Put markers on the table about what they want. They said things that could be construed in certain ways, but I will put it. I'll leave this part of our talk at this. When Donald Trump came off the airplane, Xi Jinping was not there to meet
him. He was not there.
In a very short period of time, Vladimir Putin will be arriving in China. And I will bet my last dollar that Xi Jinping will be on the tarmac to meet Vladimir Putin. And if that doesn't send a signal, nothing does.
As a fact, he was busy meeting with the president, I believe it was Tajikistan, that was visiting the same day. Which normally you'd for a state meeting at that level, you would clear up your entire day and not have some other meetings. And when they get here, tell me, as he walked out of the palace of people of the people, and from what I understand, the U.S. Secret Service were not allowed in.
I think they were allowed in. It was the question of their being armed.
Okay.
No, and again, the Secret Service, Congress needs to do a top to bottom scrub of the Secret Service because there's some fundamental issues here. You know, the Secret Service has been accompanying presidents to foreign countries for as long as I've been alive. They have protocols. This isn't their first rodeo. This isn't the first time an American president gone to China. Again, the arrogance of the Trump administration, the belief that America can do anything it wants, anytime it wants, anywhere it wants. That the mere fact that an American president has shown up in China must clear all rules and regulations to make way for America to do anything it wants. It's never been that way. There are protocols in place regarding presidential security. Those protocols are justifiably classified. But one of the key things is when you bring weaponry into another country, there must be an understanding of the rules of engagement, who has responsibility for what, et cetera, and where that responsibility, begins and where it ends. And these are things that are done through advanced party work. That means that there should have been a Secret Service delegation in China, scripting this whole thing. The president changed his trip from April, and that trip was supposed to be a very aggressive trip, a dominant trip, an alpha dog trip. And now he's coming and he's more of a beta cuck trip. I'm going to get in trouble.
It's the truth, though. I mean, it's the absolute truth.
And the question is, did the Secret Service, do anything? Because this is literally something that cannot happen.
Right.
If you know the president is going from point A to point B, and there may be protocol transitions. It's just, for instance, we know that if a foreign leader was to go from outside the White House to inside the White House, that protocols change.
Right.
Security parameters change. If somebody's visiting Vladimir Putin, the security that will exist outside the Kremlin and the security arrangements that exist inside the Kremlin change. And this is where professionals say, okay, what's the handover? How are we doing this? My responsibilities were this on the outside. They're now this on the inside, and things of that nature. There should be no questions. There should be no controversy. There should be nothing. So the fact that a Secret Service agent carrying a weapon made an effort to enter a space and was told by the Chinese, no, you can't. That's a failure, not of the Chinese, but of the Secret Service. This is amateur hour in the extreme. Now, fortunately, the United States was visiting China, where the president is absolutely at zero threat. And we know this. I mean, Xi Jinping is such a, the Chinese thought this out. They were having dinner together. And Xi Jinping had, measured his seating height and had the intelligence on what Donald Trump's seating height was. and he put a cushion on Trump's chair so that Trump would be sitting at the same level as Xi Jinping. And Donald Trump came in and insisted the cushion be removed. So when he sat down, he's below Xi Jinping. It's a self-own. It's literally just bad camera work. If you wanted to look strong, you actually look weak, especially since you're almost an 80-year-old man with bad posture, leaning forward. Yep, so you even make yourself even more diminished. But the Chinese weren't there to play stupid tricks with the president. The Chinese did everything they could to make President Trump feel at ease, at home, and to give him the space necessary to do what he wanted to do. Chinese, you know, they didn't ask for this trip.
Right.
Trump wanted this trip. And China accommodated him, and they gave him the space to accomplish anything he wanted to accomplish. But he had no agenda, no notes. And did you see how, I mean, just what kind of president we have? And he's really he's not a very smart man. Okay. We speak of agreement and capable. All right. Xi Jinping sits down. He has a notebook. He refers to the notebook.
I was going
to
bring that up.
And then Xi Jinping leaves the notebook, sort of oriented in the direction of Donald Trump, gets up and walks away. It's a test of integrity.
Yep.
Donald Trump reaches over, opens it up, starts leafing through it, and then shuts it as if nobody saw it. Donald Trump just proved that he's a man that can't be trusted on anything. Another reason why we are in agreement incapable. The president of the United States should never have touched that.
Absolutely.
First of all, the President of the United States should be so well briefed that he should know what's already in that. That's the job of the CIA. That's the job of the NSA. So that, you know, even when Xi Jinping thinks he has to go to the bathroom, we know in advance what his bladder capacity is, and we've measured the liquid. And we that's the kind of preparation that normally takes place. I'm exaggerating, but, you know, presidents of the United States used to have the reputation of being the best briefed people. United States recognize the need to be briefed, meaning they have enough humility to say, I don't know. You guys need to inform me. President Trump is an egomaniac. This is a cult of personality, not a president. I mean, and I'm being serious here. This is a man.
I absolutely believe you. I know.
And so he thinks that he alone, I'd hate to work for this guy because you couldn't do your job. You literally have to wait for the next social media posting to say where the president's going. And even then, you don't know how far you can take it before it's contradicted by the other.
Yep.
So your job is just to sit there and tread water while the president, has a bad night and puts 11 self-contradictory posts out in the space of 2 hours. If that's not a sign of mental instability, nothing is, especially when you're talking about the president of the United States. But this is a humiliation.
Okay.
And the president doesn't even understand how humiliating it is because it's an acknowledgement of, A, the man has no integrity, zero.
True, he absolutely. Trusted.
B, it shows his weakness. He gave it away.
Yeah.
Again, this is a trap. If you think for a moment Xi Jinping made a mistake by leaving that there, oops, I left my folder. No, this was a carefully choreographed thing where they went, okay, Trump, 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 time, 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 boom. Excuse me, I'm going to leave for a minute here. I'm going to walk over here. It was timed. And all the Chinese are sitting there going, what's Trump going to do? There it is. Took the bait. The guy's a scumbag. It was a test. And Trump failed it. And it's a failure of America.
And you know what amazes me? First of all, you've got to consider you're going to be under camera surveillance in any and every direction. The fact that that didn't hit us. It's like, what do you think he was going to see? English writing? Here's my, you know, this is how we're going to attack America. This is our secret plan. If nothing else, it's going to be in Mandarin. And you've got to consider you're not just under scrutiny, you're being videotaped, which he was. And the whole world got to see that.
No, they saw a dishonest man.
Yeah,
they saw a dishonest
man. Exactly.
That's what a dishonest man does. And again, that's the president of the United States.
Sad to say,
I can guarantee you this, Vladimir Putin would never reach for that phone.
Oh, no. It's hard to believe, but you can honestly say at this point that the Bidens were almost Boy Scouts compared to what we have right now. Shocking enough.
The Bidens were much more calculating, much more.
Yes, they were.
Look, they were corrupt as the day is long. They were a crime family, a literal crime.
Oh, absolutely.
But they were old school crime family. meaning that they played by the rules of criminal conduct that normally governs American political entities. Look, it's been this forever. Our politics.
I'm on internet. Yep, internet dropped off.
Where did
We're
I
back.
get cut off?
The Bidens were an old-fashioned criminal
They're old
family.
school. They're old
They're
school kind. They
calculating.
well, they're the way all American politicians used to be. I mean, fundamentally, you don't get to be an American politician at the national level if you're a Boy Scout. Okay, the day of Jimmy Stewart, Mr. Smith goes to Washington. That's A, it's never happened, and B, did it's long dead. You've sold your soul to a political establishment long ago, and you've made repeated compromises. And again, the way the American system work, we don't allow people to be Harry Truman anymore, to retire bankrupt, broke. I mean, that's the whole reason why presidents have pensions now, because the president of the United States went from being a rich man to being a pauper in a town. It was an embarrassment. And so we have a pension, but you can't survive on the pension. Nobody expects you to survive on the pension. This is why you see, as you work your way up the system, you go from being, $110,000 a year salary, 3 years later with the same salary, having $34 million in the bank. How'd that happen? Well, it was because of corruption. And then you become a senator and you have $134 million in the bank. You own huge homes because you get great deals. And you become president and you leverage that into a multi-billion dollar empire. That's just the way it is. Biden mastered that. I mean, the state of Delaware is literally the byproduct of Biden's corruption. The whole, why do you have so many corporations incorporated into the state of Delaware? Why are all the banks in Delaware? Because Biden created, a criminal enterprise with the backing of the United States Senate, and then he continued that criminal enterprise as president. We know this. It's all documented. Nobody wants to investigate because everybody's guilty. Donald Trump's running a different grift. This man is just straight up. There's old money, there's new money. Biden was old money. Trump is the new money. All this pretense, this flash and everything. But I mean, look at his son. I mean, we won't dig too deep in this, but Republic of Georgia, very complicated internal political dynamic taking place. Their constitution still requires them to seek out NATO membership and EU membership, but they fought back against opening up a second front. They don't have diplomatic relations with Russia because of the controversies over Abkhazia and Ossetia. It's a difficult situation for Georgians. I feel sorry for them, and you can.
С этим долбанным интернетом.
Stopped again, so I don't know if you can hear me. Oh, there you are.
It's back.
Okay,
I don't know what the hell's up.
the friendship.
Sunspots.
But what's Donald Trump doing in the middle of this? There is no official American diplomacy. There's Donald Trump Jr. projecting the construction of Trump Tower in Tbilisi, and that's it. That's the center of American foreign policy regarding Georgia, is the accumulation of wealth to incorporated that. And we know that all of these weekend deals where you create a crisis on Friday, resolve it on Monday, make a lot of money in the short end of the market, it's all driven by Donald Trump.
Oh,
And you said
absolutely.
it's a casino. It's a casino. It's okay. No, Mr. President, it's not a casino. It's the American economy that you're gaming for your sole benefit. So, Trump is an extraordinarily corrupt individual. But normally you want to hide that corruption. You want to at least
Yeah,
pretend it's not
preferably.
happening. You put on the the a sort of a subterfuge. I'm an honorable man, etc. Vladimir Putin wouldn't have to reach for that folder because, to be honest, Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping would be sitting next to each other, opening up folders, showing each other, because there's that kind of trust, there's that kind of confidence. The fact that China has exposed that the president is a thief, a sneak, also exposes the fact that there is no trust. There's zero trust between China and the United States. The president failed a test in public. And the sad thing is most Americans, I mean, you have MAGA going, oh, look at our president, man. See, look at that. Well, I mean, that speaks volumes of the people that think that's a good thing. It's not a good thing.
But these are the same people that, you know, bought the Trump coin. By the way, have you seen how far it's fallen off of its peak? 96%.
So what? He made all his money. It's the same thing with the Trump phone.
Exactly.
$590 million. People, 59,000 people. No, 590,000 people spent $100 each buying into a phone that will never be built.
Yep. You know, and they still, I mean, this is a definition of groupie. This is a definition of cult. You know, no matter what the cult leader does, we're going to drink that Kool-Aid because, you know, maybe it's true belief. Maybe it's just an inability to admit that I was wrong.
Stupid people. we sort of be honest and admit that they're just stupid people. Unfortunately, America now, we can look at the percentage of people who still identify as MAGA, and now we've basically collected the percentage of literal imbeciles in America, people with IQs that would legally classify them as retarded. I know we're not allowed to use that word anymore, so we're mentally challenged. But the point is, you can't be a good citizen unless you possess intellectual curiosity.
Of course.
In an understanding of who and what we are collectively. These are people who, when the president says, I don't believe in the rule of law, I only believe in my own moral compass, forget the fact that he may have raped a 13-year-old girl and he may have committed a whole bunch of other crimes, that, you know, some moral compass is, man, we saw his moral compass on display as he reached over and opened up the folder of Xi Jinping. The man has no moral compass. But it also implies that he has no respect for the Constitution of the United States of America. Yep. The fact that people who call themselves American citizens, who claim to be part of this constitutional republic, support a man who has separated himself from the Constitution to such a degree means that we no longer stand for anything in the United States.
Well, speaking of which, one of his subordinates, Admiral Cooper, who under cross-examination by members of Congress said what? Oh, yeah, we didn't target anything. There was never any hits. And the retort was, well, you know, it's open source information. You know, dozens of hospitals hit, multiple schools hit. It's like, we don't know anything about that. We're not investigating anything like that. What's, you know, at the end, if the next administration comes along and decides to prosecute, who's going to answer for that?
Well, we know that the President of the United States has immunity to anything that constitutes an official act. So the President of the United States won't be prosecuted for the war crimes that he has committed and that he has facilitated. The hope is that Donald Trump will be impeached and convicted by the U.S. Senate and held account to that regard, because that's a political act, not a criminal act, and therefore the Supreme Court doesn't have a say, and they've acknowledged that. Impeachment's Congress's business. But if you want to prosecute, that's our business, and we've given him virtual immunity.
Right.
Pete Hegseth does not have this immunity. And Pete Hegseth should be arrested and prosecuted, and so should everybody in the kill chain below him who failed to at least make an effort to adhere to the rule of law. When the Secretary of Defense / War says more lethality, less legality, that should send an alarm bell ringing in the heads of everybody who heard that, especially those who wear 4 stars. CENTCOM commander, when he was ordered back in March of 2025 to disband the very entities responsible for doing the humanitarian review, the legal review of targeting, to disband it, he should have said, no, that's an illegal order. I'm not disbanding it. I'm actually reinforcing that we're going to adhere to the rule of law. And go on record writing out a memorandum of why more lethality, less legality is unconstitutional, but instead they went with it. Bradley Cooper is the man who signed off on using artificial intelligence to enhance the U.S. target deck. We took a target deck that should never have had more than a couple 1,000 targets in it, and we bombed 15,000 points on the ground in Iran. We have no clue what we bombed. None. We admit to one mistake only, and then we say that's still under investigation, and that's the Minab school. But you know, there's clearly documented evidence of you know, dozens, if not hundreds, of other the targets hit that have nothing to do with military or command and control. Admiral Cooper doesn't know what he bombed, and he doesn't know what he achieved. I fantasize about being a senator in these situations. You know, I cut my teeth spending 7 years in Iraq getting the Iraqis to admit that they lied across the board.
Right.
But the best way you get someone to admit they lie is to allow them to lie to begin with. And so the first thing you do is you let Cooper commit to the lie. He has now committed to the lie. And now he has provided specific fact-based points that can be dug into. And, you know, the follow-on question should have exposed the fact that he doesn't know anything. So he can put up the defense of, I am an ignorant fool, in which case he just gets fired. Or that he's lying to Congress under oath, in which case he gets arrested and prosecuted. But Cooper is a criminal, straight up war criminal. I would say it to his face today because it's the truth. He is the commander of American military forces who carried out unlawful orders. Any order attached to the premise of more lethality, less legality is an unlawful order. It's a violation of the War Crimes Act of 1996, an act of Congress. When you knowingly and flagrantly violate the Geneva Conventions, you know what the penalty is?
Death.
Death. And I would love nothing more now that we've reinstituted the firing squad to see Pete Hegseth and Bradley Cooper up against the wall and have five rounds pumped into their hearts and terminate their life, because that's what they deserve, to be honest. They deserve due process, mm-hmm. You know, but the facts are the facts. I mean, you know, we'll give Nazis due process, but, yeah. You know, everybody knew going into Nuremberg that the Nazis had murdered Jews, the Nazis had murdered Russians, they'd murdered Poles, they'd murdered Belarusians. We knew they were guilty. We just had to go through the process of formally registering their guilt. There is no question that Bradley Cooper is guilty of war crimes. He's guilty of violating the War Powers, the War Crimes Act. So is Pete Hegseth. So are a whole host of other people. They all should be put to death, because if they aren't, if they're not put to death, then the rule of law means nothing in the United States. The rule of law means nothing. If the United States is ever going to reverse course, now, of course, there are going to be people out there saying, Scott, you know, death penalty, da, da, da. Whatever. I don't make the laws. And I will put this down to, I'm opposed to the death penalty in most cases because our courts are fundamentally flawed and we end up convicting a lot of truly innocent people, et cetera. So maybe not the death penalty, but these people need to be held to account. There cannot be a washing this under the rug. You don't, you know, what we did with the captain of the USS Vincennes who shot down an Iranian airliner. You don't give him a medal and pretend that he did a good job and say this was honorable service. He panicked. Yeah. He panicked in a situation and committed a war crime. Should he be put in jail? Maybe not. Should he be relieved of command? Absolutely. Should he be stripped of rank? 100%. Denied retirement. You screwed up. We entrusted you with this position. You're supposed to be better than this. And now you panicked in a non-combat situation, misidentifying the approach of a civilian airliner with a F-14. And you panicked. You literally panicked. I don't want a captain who panics to be in command of a U.S. naval vessel.
Oh, yeah.
I want calm, cool people. And we're supposed to train people and put them through various tests to ensure that they don't panic under stress. You know, so we can't have that either. We can't be whitewashing the failure to perform of the American military. And yet we're not only whitewashing the failure to perform, we're legitimizing absolute flagrant war crimes.
Yeah, yeah. And that captain, by the way, got promoted. I'm not sure if he got admiral or not, but he definitely got promoted. it gives you a feeling the collateral damage is really extra bonus points. I mean, that's how the Israelis approach it. And speaking of Israelis, you know, so forward, Fifth Fleet Forward is now being moved to Israel. That's the word that's going around anyways. So they're going to be leaving the Gulf and they're going to be repositioning in Israel. That's insane.
So be it. It clarifies things. I remember during the Desert Storm, we had an Israeli problem, and the Israeli problem was manifest.
That's well put. We had an Israeli problem.
I mean, we had told the Israelis that we were going to handle the Iraqi Scuds.
Mm-hmm.
And then Israel started getting hit with Iraqi Scuds, and they said, "How are you handling it?" And we really didn't have a solution because we didn't know what we were doing. But we kept telling the Israelis, you gotta stay out of it because you could take apart the entire coalition.
Right.
Here's the problem. I mean, how do you coordinate with the Israelis? We sent over an Air Force general who set up a cell inside Israel. But can you provide real-time targeting data to the Israelis during a conflict? The answer was no. And the Israelis got pissed off because we provided them with satellite imagery based upon their quest so they could update their own targeting. But the satellite imagery we provided them was from like December of 1990. It wasn't the new stuff. And the Israelis were angry. And so they kept talking about the need to fly their own reconnaissance missions, but we couldn't let Israeli aircraft over. They wanted to bring people from Israel to CENTCOM forward in Riyadh, and the Saudis are like, that ain't happening. There was a time when we recognized that open collusion with Israel was not a good idea.
No.
Straight up bad idea. The Saudis and everybody tolerated the dispatch of a couple Patriot batteries to Israel to protect against missiles and all that. But the idea that the Israelis were, part of the coalition, there had to be a firewall there. And we kept that firewall there throughout the entire war. And it led to a lot of problems. Like at the end of the war, the Israelis deciding that the only solution to Saddam was to assassinate Saddam. And it set things in motion. But the point is, we knew back then that Israel wasn't a partner when we deal with the Gulf Arab Arabs on issues pertaining to Persian Gulf. Look at today.
Yep.
Israel's the only partner.
Well, no, there's United Arab Emirates who are Israel's mistress. That's now been outed by Israel.
The UAE is just an extension of Israel now. It's part of the greater Israel.
Yep.
It's an absolute joke. Yeah, and I mean, if I were the United Arab Emirates, I mean, it's like, wait a minute. I thought we were keeping this relationship secret.
Whoops. Did I say something out loud? Netanyahu was coming to visit. That's...
Yeah, and then, but now we know Israeli troops were on the ground. That Israeli forces were coordinating with the UAE to launch attacks against Iran. This whole victim card that the UAE was paying, it's just 100% garbage.
Well, they learned from the best victim card holders in the world.
Israeli.
No matter how much I murder, pillage, and devastate, I'm the victim. I'm always the victim.
I expended four rounds of ammunition. I need reimbursement. This ammunition's expensive. The fact that I shot pregnant women in the belly and then shot her 3-year-old boy coming up, no, we don't want to talk about that. But, oh, my God, they forced me to fire four rounds. I mean, yeah, that's the Israeli victim card. I have to take my dog in for pet psychology because my trained rapist German shepherd actually had to rape people in a rape room for this built on Nazi designs. You know who invented the concept of using dogs to rape?
No.
The Nazis.
Did they really? I missed that. I mean, of all things I read, actually, I missed that the Germans did that.
The Germans absolutely did that. And now the Israelis have taken the German playbook and are applying it against the Palestinians. Israel is nothing more than the modern manifestation of Nazi Germany. Straight up.
You would think this is a sick nightmare snuff video or a snuff book. But it's real life, and the people that are you watch some of these veterans testifying, Israeli veterans testifying, Knesset. I have nightmares. I did everything you told me. I murdered. I did this. Well, it didn't occur to you shooting kids in the head isn't the right thing to do? Now you have nightmares.
As much sympathy that I have for the Einsatzgruppen a veteran, you know, crying. I mean, have you seen the I mean, brilliant movie. Come and See. Very difficult movie to watch.
Oh yeah. I saw that.
But at the end, when the you know the captured people are there, and the Ukrainians are saying, "Oh well, you know, we didn't. We were forced to do it. We didn't really do it. We didn't want to do it. We didn't forgive us." And they burned them all to death, anyways. As they deserve. I mean, no
as
sympathy.
They deserve
these people. And the other thing is, again, you know, I we're all over the place, but you know, Ukraine. At some point in time, the concept of having sympathy for the innocent Ukrainian people dissipates when you realize that they know exactly what their government's doing, and they've turned a blind eye to it, etc. Or worse, if you're from Western Ukraine, you actively support this. You say this is the good thing. There is no more concept of innocent Ukrainian. I don't buy into the concept of an innocent Ukrainian, especially an innocent Western Ukrainian. And my soul is my heart has become hardened against that. Just like I lived in Germany for some time in the 70s and the early 80s. My dad was stationed there, and I love Germany. It's a beautiful country. And there's no such thing as a good German. Of course, there are good Germans. There's good, but collectively the Germans are horrible. Because collectively the Germans never denazified, and they don't have the intellectual curiosity or the intellectual integrity to acknowledge this.
Well, the West Germans. The East Germans actually did get denazified.
Correct. No, the East Germans are okay. Yeah. But the West Germans, you know, when you look at, you know, Rheinmetall, the Nazi organization, you look at the totality of German industry, Nazis, they never denazified. Yep. They are all linked back to that. And from these industrial, you know, this industrial legacy comes the new Nazi masters of Germany today. There's never been denazification. The German military had superficial trials. The bulk of the German generals who were found guilty of war crimes, sentenced to 25-year sentences, 12 to 25-year sentences, were all pardoned by John McCloy. So that Germany then could take those officers, make them part of the new Bundeswehr, which had a 30% SS percentage in their
high? Seriously? Wow.
Well, I mean, 30% maybe SS and Wehrmacht, the people with experience on the front, but it's a very high percentage. And you know, so the Bundeswehr that was created, well, let me put it this way: the police units of Germany that became the heart of the Bundeswehr were police units that had very high SS participation.
Gestapo, a lot.
And so the, you know, that, but that's Germany. That's the reality of Germany. So today, you know, I'm very harsh on Germany because there's no forgiveness in me because you cannot say that any of this is a mistake. And the fact that your country has done that, which remember what was the purpose of NATO? I'm giving away a lot of the premise of my upcoming book. But
easy. Keep the Soviet Union out, keep America in, and keep the Germans down.
Gosh, let's take a look at what's happening. The Germans are rising up. The Americans are leaving. And they're getting ready to invite Russian energy back in. So NATO has failed 100%. And, you know, but it's because NATO was always an artifice. German and the other thing is there's no such thing as innocent German because all the Germans that participated in the facade that was NATO understood exactly what they were doing.
Oh yeah,
they were buying time to get the Reich back up on its feet. So it's I've lost sympathy for. I know you're not supposed to have collective punishment. It's against the law, and I would never carry out military operations based upon the premise of collective punishment. But intellectually. I'm at the point right now where if you're going to call yourself a democracy, or at least you have democratic values and institutions, that implies that the people have a say on whom they elect to represent them in higher office.
Right.
That the people keep electing the people that have the sins of the fathers tattooed all over their forehead. That's on the people now. Just like I blame the United States for our political leadership. I know I get in trouble with all the peace acts. That's not me. Well, screw you. That means you're weak. That means you haven't done anything.
Yeah.
If you're out there saying, I didn't do that, well, enough people did it. That means you haven't done a good enough job of articulating your opposition to this. You have failed somewhere. Ask yourself why you can't win over mainstream support. Is it because you still dress up like a goddamn hippie from the 1960s, don't take showers, and have bad breath? Maybe people don't want to hang around you. God, I'm going to get in trouble with that one. But you know, but the point is, or you know, you allow. I mean,
but those hippies, by the way, the majority of those hippies turned into the worst autocrats, the worst the across the board. Not only are they greedy as hell, you know, they've sacrificed the next four generations for their own well-being, but they're the worst autocrats, police state, this, that, you know. And not just in the U.S., but across the entire West.
That's right. The other thing that's happened here in the United States is we've allowed ourselves to come, and I'm going to use a big word that I hopefully get correct, bifurcated.
Yes.
Did I say that right?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, that's how I pronounce it.
I'm a Marine, and I should not use to anything with more than two syllables in it.
Damn them quarter words.
It's a big word, but it means that quarter words. Sliced and diced. We were sliced and diced as society. You know, I'm a boomer. And so that people are telling me that I'm a boomer, I should sit down and shut up because my days passed. Beneath me are the Zoomers. Yeah. and they're being told that you're being dated out. And then you have millennials, and then you have Gen X and Gen Y and this and all that stuff. And for a while there, we allowed the marketplace to divide us that way from the market standpoint. But what they did is they divide and conquered our society.
Yeah.
I just had a granddaughter, and it was one of these.
And congratulations. Huge congratulations.
It was an epiphany because I was looking at her, and I realized that there is a direct connection between me and her, that what I do today impacts her and will impact her. I have 20 years left in my life to make a meaningful impact so that when she's 20, the world is a good place. But there has to be a direct line between her and me that connects all generations. There's no more such thing as I'm a boomer, you're a zoomer, we're humanity. And it doesn't matter what our age is. It matters what we contribute to society individually. And so we need to break through this crap. I mean, we've allowed ourselves to be divided and conquered by people who don't have the best interests of society at large. And I don't know why we got down this route. I don't know how we got here, but anyways, that's where we are.
It was a long route, but hey, I'll take us back just a little bit. Now, U.S. is putting forces in Israel. I mean, obviously. Israel's committing genocide across the board of most of its neighbors. It hasn't gotten to Jordan and Egypt yet, but they're already talking Turkey is next on the line.
They did Jordan and Egypt already.
Yeah, back earlier. In the
40s. Yeah.
Yeah, but this wave, which brings an issue with Turkey, too. I'll ask that in a minute. U.S. forces are now going to be located officially in a country that's committing genocide, committing war crimes, the most heinous war crimes that humanity can commit, just about. You know, maybe there's something a little worse. They didn't quite get to the Mongol side of, you know, boiling your enemies alive in oil, but that may be down the road. You know, we don't know that. That may be a next on the agenda.
Raping them with dogs is pretty bad.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. How does that reflect on U.S. forces that are stationed in a country like that?
Well, first of all, we've been in Israel forever.
But not officially on this level.
A photograph of, I forget what, an American leader, maybe Trump, was photographed shaking the hands of American service members wearing uniforms that are normally and uniform items that are normally linked with tier one or tier one type American special operations forces.
Biden, I think that was the first year of all of this.
And, maybe people are upset. You can't show their tattoos because that gives away. Well, okay. Yeah. But don't show their wristwatches because if they're wearing a certain kind of watch, like a sumo watch, and they could be Air Force people. You saw the speculation going on.
Yeah.
But nobody said, what the hell is a tier one unit doing permanently stationed in Israel? What's going on there? Nobody wanted to ask that question because they were permanently stationed in Israel. It may be a permanent TDY or TAD, meaning, you know, but paperwork implies it's temporary, but they were there. There was a facility. They were armed. They are operational.
Yep.
So what's going on with this? We had THAAD units there.
Oh, yeah. But those were also TDY. They weren't officially
Permanent
there on a
TDY.
permanent, right?
They're permanent. We have a permanent logistics base there where we fly in our aircraft. There is a
Right.
permanent Air Force logistics unit on permanent TDY orders. My point is, the United States has already in existence in Israel a permanent military infrastructure. What we didn't have was the command and control
Right.
recognition that this is that. And it was difficult because only recently Israel fell under European command, not CENTCOM. It was only recently they've been
Oh,
chopped over
really?
to Central Command. But now we're going to put a headquarters element in there, which all it does is solidify an existing relationship. To give you an example, and it's something I raised to people back in June when they talked about, Israel's attack against Iran. I said, do you think for a second that this attack took place without extensive planning between the United States? Do you understand what kind of deconfliction had to take place to get Israel to fly through zones that are American controlled,
Oh, absolutely.
in the exchange of codes? And then to make, matters even more complicated, the current one, the current strike that took place, starting on February 28th, this was a joint operation, which
Yep.
it means the level of joint planning down to everything. The Israelis are using American tankers. That means Americans have to be aware of every strike package that goes in.
Absolutely.
Combat search and rescue has to be coordinated. There has to be zones brought in. All this has to be coordinated. Target decks, sequencing targets, et cetera. Everything was coordinated. It wasn't as though Israel's running its own air campaign. We're running our own air campaign. This was a joint air campaign. And the biggest evidence of that is that secret Israeli military base in Najaf. You see American tankers going over there and parking on top of it to fuel Israeli aircraft.
You cannot make this stuff up, man. You
No,
cannot make this stuff
it's all there.
up.
So all we're doing by moving an American headquarters to Israel is formally recognizing what has been happened, because we've had in Israel, we have America, because I told you in the Gulf War, the reason why I told that story is we built a Chinese wall between
Yeah.
Israel and CENTCOM to make sure that, today CENTCOM is in Israel. We have planning cells attached or co-located to Israeli planning cells, but it's been done informally and under the radar. All we're doing now is recognizing that what we're doing is that we're taking the, because we can no longer operate out of Al Udeid Air Base that we're the pre, so we're
Right.
moving that to Israel. And you're going to see us withdrawing. Jordan's going to play a role in the
Yep.
basing. I'm curious to see what Egypt's going to do, because we are going to need some strategic depth in this regard, given the fact that Europe is no longer a reliable partner. We can't use Sigonella. We can't use Torrejón. We can't use other bases. Ramstein, it'd be interesting to see what happens to Ramstein going
Oh, yeah.
forward.
K Town.
Landstuhl, where we take all our wounded.
Yep.
So it'd be interesting to see what happens with Egypt and the kind of basing arrangements to get Greece. Do we start relying on Crete more and all this? We're looking at a restructuring. There's talk about a new security architecture, and I think part of that new security architecture is the transition of American military power being centric to the Persian Gulf, with Al Udeid as the center of the storm, and seeing this instead transition to Israel and other nations, so that the Persian Gulf, instead of being the center of where we're at, becomes on the periphery of our projection.
Yeah, that's
I
interesting.
think that's the
Yeah.
direction we're heading right now.
Well, how is this? I mean, in the grander scheme of things, Israel being a pariah, well, for many parts of the world, it's a pariah nation that's committing genocide. And the U.S. Army's there, so by guilt by association, even if they said, well, we didn't know, well, you should have known. You're sitting there. It's hard not to realize what your host is doing. That roast beef is the neighbor he just chopped up that he's serving you. And then on top of that, it's been said multiple times. At first they said, it was just a joke, but it's been said multiple times by multiple Israeli politicians, Turkey's next. And the U.S. actually has an alliance document with Turkey, part of NATO, which it doesn't have with Israel. So whose side does the U.S. take in this case?
Well, the U.S. wants to take the U.S.
Right.
But from the Israelis, I think they need to understand that this isn't a good thing that just happened.
Yep.
This is the worst thing that happened, because if the U.S. is putting a base in Israel, a headquarters in Israel, it means we ran out of options. Because as I said, the reason why I brought up the Gulf War is we politically and geopolitically, we can't do that.
Right.
It's not sustainable regionally. The reason why we're going to Israel is that nobody else wants to be on our side in alliance with Israel. We're looking at, you look at the UAE, but I don't see the UAE being long for this world.
No, not this I don't either.
Extension. So, they're committing suicide actively as we speak. Israel is we're looking at the fall of Rome. But the one thing we know about the United States, and we talked about it earlier, who else thought that they had an agreement with the United States?
Yeah.
Japanese and South Koreans?
Oh, yeah.
Israel needs to understand that, while we're putting our headquarters there, support for Israel, 60% of Americans no longer support Israel.
Yep.
And that number is going to even go higher when the reality of Israel comes up, when they raped the dog rapists and everything else comes out, and how bad these people are. And we start going back and reflecting on the USS Liberty incident. We reflect on Jonathan Pollard. We reflect on,
Who's running for Knesset, by the way?
Well, of course he is. Because he deserves that. They deserve him. When the truth comes out about the Mossad knowing that the Beirut truck bombing was taking place, but not sharing the intelligence with the Americans because America needed to pay a price. We're blaming the wrong people. When we talk about the harm that's befallen the United States, Israel has been playing a dirty game from day one, and the United States has been on the bad end of this dirty game more often than not. And as more Americans become aware of this, you're going to see support for Israel plummet to the point where it'll be politically impossible for the United States to continue a meaningful military relationship with Israel. So that's why I say this is the worst thing possible, because what will happen eventually is we will withdraw from Israel, as we always withdraw from nations that become problematic for us.
Yeah. Well, last question, because I know I've kept you for a while. Over under, Trump starts something new in the Gulf, a third phase of this, instead of just letting this. And Kagan, it's hard to believe I'm actually agreeing with Kagan, but his let it just peter out and leave is probably the best option. So, of course, we're not going to take that.
But Kagan's not saying that. Kagan's saying the best solution is doubling down on stupid and going in with the big war.
Well, the options is right. The U.S. doesn't have the capacity for that.
We have zero capacity for that. Central Command has assembled enough military power, I believe, to allow the president to carry out a week or so's worth of sustained bombing.
And then,
but then that's the question. And again, now we know that Bradley Cooper is a liar.
Right.
This commander who's lying, and we know that Pete Hegseth is unable to recognize lies because he's just stupid. And I don't know where General Kane is on this, but, the fact is Kane should be smarter than the average bear. We didn't defeat Iran the first time around.
Nope.
Albert Einstein has been linked to the following saying. I don't, we don't know if he actually said it, but people say he said it. So I'll give him credit indirectly. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome. Okay, we went in loaded for bear against the Iranians. And for 37 days, we hit 15,000 targets. Turns out we didn't know what we hit. Cooper admitted that in so much. And what we did hit, we didn't destroy. We can play games with the president saying we killed eight. There's only 18% of Iran's ballistic missile capability back. The CIA is saying 70. Now they're saying 90. Araghchi is saying what I would embrace, 120% bigger now, because Iran has reconstituted the totality of their ballistic missile capability, and they have their ballistic missile production capability, which we didn't destroy, and they're producing new missiles.
and four ports on the Caspian working overtime.
Overtime.
With and Russia. They've
got, you know, optimistically, 30 of 33 missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz operational. How'd that happen?
Do you think those destroyers got hit? That they brought in? They're claiming it was bait. But
I don't think they got hit. I don't think we get to hide that from people for too long. You know, short term we can deny, mm-hmm. but eventually we have to acknowledge damage and casualties. Plus, you know, we can belittle the United States, but when you put, I just remind people that our destroyers were designed. You know, these defense systems were designed back in the Cold War to help absorb and deflect and defeat literal waves of Soviet cruise missiles. What happened here is that they succeeded. They shot down waves of drones, waves of missiles. But the last element of these waves broke through the missile defense barrier and had to be taken down with SeaWiz. You know, the was it 20 millimeter or 30 millimeter Gatling guns that
the Phalanx systems.
Phalanx, yeah, they have. You know, 30-second burst. They can be reloaded in 45 minutes. But you know, 45 minutes is forever in a combat zone. If the enemy knows you can reload in 45 minutes, and you have them run dry, launch your second wave at the 25-minute point.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, and I think what happened here is the Navy got in there and quickly exhausted their ability to maintain a credible defense. And were compelled to withdraw, not because they were hit, but that if they stayed, they would be hit. And that's a defeat. That's a defeat for the United States Navy.
Yep.
We didn't achieve what we wanted to achieve. We can't achieve what we want to achieve. And then the other reality is, you know, we can't open the Strait of Hormuz. That isn't going to happen. If Trump attacks, there's talk that he'll hit energy infrastructure.
Right.
But if he's operating on the fact that, you know, Iran only has 18% of their missiles left and therefore we don't have to worry about it, he's wrong. Iran will literally eradicate, devastate, decimate, whatever big word you want to use. Let's say destroy the Gulf Arab energy infrastructure. So we've gone from, you know, disrupting 20 to 22% of the global energy supply to destroying 20 to 22%.
Yep.
And that will be the end of the global economy. The end of it. It can't recover.
Yeah. Qatar is out.
I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I now can hear. Could you hear me?
Yeah, I could hear you. That was interesting. Okay. I don't think you heard me. But you know, a lot of it is already destroyed. Qatar, from my experience, when I was looking at the photos, my experience in the supply chain for these kinds of construction projects, I was thinking about 1.5-2 years. And then when I started reading what people on the ground are saying, it's more like 5 to 7 years to rebuild, I mean, that level of devastation. But what happens when there's no drinking water? It's 50 degrees over there right now, Celsius, so it's 120 Fahrenheit.
We're looking at the death of nations.
Yeah.
And so now you asked me the over-under. And here's the hard part, because if we apply logic, military analysis, geopolitical analysis, energy security analysis, there's no way Trump can attack, because it's literal suicide, political suicide, and economic suicide.
Yep.
But we're not dealing with a rational human being. We're dealing with a man who thinks it's okay to reach over and read the notes of Xi Jinping. A man dumb enough not to realize that was a trap. We're dealing with a man with no moral compass. We're dealing with one of the most corrupt individuals in the world who views every problem not in terms of how good is it for America or the world or allies or such, but what's in it for me financially? How do I benefit? How do, you know, so he's a grifter, a con man, a snake oil salesman. I'm writing a paper about this. I won't give it away too much, but I oftentimes call him a man suffering from narcissistic personality disorder.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people have pushed back and said, you're not a psychologist, Scott, or a psychiatrist. How can you make that assessment? Who are you? You know, you shouldn't use these words because those words have meaning. And, you know, you're only, you know, even if it's true, you're undermining your argument. Well, time out. I'm glib sometimes and all, but I'm very careful with what I say because I've actually done the research. People may not realize, but in 2019, I was on a panel of board-certified psychiatrists and psychologists discussing the mental health of Donald Trump on C-SPAN. Bandy
2019.
Lee was a Yale certified doctor, or Harvard certified doctor. Very, very highly qualified. And she and others were making the case that Donald Trump is mentally ill, that he suffers from narcissistic personality disorder of the most malignant kind. And some people say, well, the Goldwater rule applies. Goldwater, of course, linked to Barry Goldwater, who ran for president back in 1964, and was subjected to attacks questioning his sanity. And people said, you can't, in American politics, you shouldn't be allowed to do long distance sniping without somebody actually sitting down in front of a psychiatrist so a proper diagnosis could be made. And I normally am supportive. I cited that in 2019 in my pushback because I was not somebody who embraced the concept of Donald Trump being a malignant narcissist. I just felt that he was a corrupt politician. And I said all politicians are narcissists in one way or the other. Since then, I've changed. I now take a look at a man who literally builds golden statues to himself and has it and have them dedicated by religious figures. Read the damn Bible, Donald. Don't you understand why God turned his back repeatedly on the Hebrews? Because they built the gold statues of idols. You've now made yourself a godlike figure. He's a man I
It's
just
the
came back from
emperor cult.
Washington.
Yeah, it's the emperor
It's
cult,
a
right out of Rome.
cult of personality. And
Yeah.
so, and the other thing people need to realize is that narcissistic personality disorder can be diagnosed long distance. The DSM, the big manual that guides it, says it can be diagnosed long distance. There are five observable traits, and if your behavior manifests itself in those, the diagnosis can be made. And so it's not me making this diagnosis. There are board certified people making this diagnosis. And so today I will clearly say that Donald Trump is a certifiable narcissistic, is suffering from narcissistic personality disorder of the most malignant nature. He's antisocial. He represents a harm to himself, to society, and the world. And now, having said that, what I'm really saying is he's mentally ill. And it's manifested. I mean, when you put out multiple self-contradictory social media postings in the span of 2 hours at 2:45 in the morning, you've got a problem, a mental health problem.
When you
So now
put
we come
50-foot
back to your
statues or to yourself or your planet on, that's a mental health
You want to
problem.
put your face on Mount Rushmore, mental health. You believe you deserve the Nobel Peace Prize for stopping wars you never stopped, mental health.
No, what, 8 or 12, 10, 12 wars he stopped? Come on.
Ten now, ten, yeah,
Armenia
ten.
and Cambodia, Cambodia. I mean, he stopped that war.
But he, well, of course he did. He's Donald Trump. But my point is, getting back to your question, how do you predict the actions of a mentally ill individual? And you can't.
You can't.
So I don't know what's going to happen. Logic dictates that America shouldn't commit suicide, which is what resuming military operations against Iran will result in. But we're dealing with an antisocial, malignant narcissist who only cares about himself. And this is a man whose family and immediate circle has profited on the timing of his social media. So, we know that this man doesn't care about America. He doesn't care about national security. He only cares about the bottom line of him and his fellow cultists. So I don't know how to answer your question. That's a long way of saying I can't put an over and under, and I wouldn't put an over and under because you can't predict the actions of an insane person, and Donald Trump is clinically insane.
That's actually a good way to put it, because any over under, you've backed it up with a very good argument, and that's the truth, and that's the unfortunate, painful truth that we're living with. Because you're absolutely right, he's unpredictable, he's narcissistic, he's very, very arrogant. I don't know, I do. I think you're absolutely right. So sit back and see where this rolls to.
Yeah, makes it interesting.
Doesn't it? Keeps us from getting any sleep, damn it. But yeah. People ask, Stas, when do you sleep? I pass out. I think that's what happens. Yeah, somewhere like, I'm off, then I'm back on. Okay.
Least you haven't. I don't know if you've done this yet. Forgive me for the people that didn't pick up on this. I have been on some panels and some long interviews where the questions go on forever. And I have fallen asleep in the middle of the question. And then there, and so you're so used to the also there's a stop and your brain goes, trouble, trouble, trouble. And you open your eyes and they're staring at you, expecting an answer. And on some occasions I will start something and I'll say, yeah, could you repeat that last part, please? And just give me, and then I'll run with it. But on at least two occasions, I've had to sit there and go, I apologize, I didn't catch that question. Could you repeat it shortly? But I did that also. Again, I won't give it away because but people who know. I was on panels, live panels in Russia, and they're going on and on and on. And I'm so tired. I've been up, like you said, just nonstop working with it. So I'm sitting there in the panel, and so I assume the thinker pose. I'm listening, and then I put my hand here and listen, and then I fall asleep. And the giveaway is when you do this.
The jerk. Oh, frick.
Oh, so yeah, I totally get it when you say tired because this isn't easy. I my
No.
father-in-law, God bless his soul, he's passed, but he appreciated the fact that I was a physical guy. I mean, I would go out and I could clear yard, I could lift things, move things, but I never got tired doing that. I mean, a little bit, but I was exhausted day in and day out. And he was a academician. He was a very very good professor and teacher of subtropical agronomy. But he told my wife, who I think was wondering why I'm so tired, he said the most exhausting work in the world is the work of the mind.
Oh, absolutely.
And
I've
when
been on panels with it, they're asking questions, and halfway through a question, I realize I don't understand a thing they said because it's just wah wah. It's like the Peanuts. Wah 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 wah. My brain is gone. I'm just so
But
tired. I'm
now,
like.
if you're at the gym and you're lifting, you come down and you do your rep. Okay, you exercise these muscles and these muscles, but the rest of your body's going, oh, you're
Yeah,
sitting there
exactly.
realizing you don't understand the word, saying your entire body is tense.
Yep.
Your brain is churning through calories like you wouldn't steam coming out of the ears as you're trying to figure out what's going on. The nonstop thought process, you're twitching all over. This is why you're exhausted, because the body is impacted by the brain.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I actually have one. I was on Время покажет. So you're standing behind podiums for experts, and they do some news and they ask some questions. And last part, they're just doing news. And the thing is, the day before, I was reading a lecture in Tambov, not was it Tambov? No, Lipetsk. So I got a couple hours of sleep, got up and I was on the road at like 3:30 or 4 in the morning to get to Moscow, hit the Moscow morning traffic, barely made it on time. And this is the end of the show. I'm just down in caffeine just to get. I got through a show, they asked me the questions, got all the answers, blah, blah, blah. Now it's just the last 10 minutes and they're just doing the news thing update. And I'm standing there and I'm realizing my head's spinning and my eyes are closing and I'm gonna fall, because I am just dead tired. Like, my God, if I fall right now, I'm never gonna get invited again. Like, sheer willpower, 10 minutes. I just gotta stay awake for 10 minutes.
No, but I've been in panels where I'm actually, because you here I'm relatively rested, so I was able. But you can see I sometimes I go off on tangents as I'm answering a question, and so we start on the main path, then I go off on a tangent, then I go off on a tangent to the tangent, and then I tangent the tangent. Then I'm sitting there going, okay, now I have to work my way back to the main question, and I work my way back. But even today, I got so far off that as I worked my way back, I went, I don't know where we even started. I can't. At least I admit it. I've been in again panel forums live, where I've gone off, and what happens is, as I'm speaking, I forget everything that I'm. I don't know why I'm speaking, who I'm speaking to, what I'm supposed to be saying. And then at that point in time, the realization is, I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know why I'm saying it, but I have to keep speaking. So I'm just throwing words, the word salad, looking around for any clue of where I am, because I literally don't know where I'm at. I'm sitting here going, where am I? So looking around for a clue. And then if I can get something, I'll quickly wrap it up and toss it. But sometimes I'm just sitting there and I have to stop and say, I'm sorry. So that's all I have to say. You know, and they're all looking at me like, and? Nope, that's it. That's all I got.
I'll end it with this. I was at a church one time, and there was a young priest, and he starts reading the sermon. Right at the end of, Orthodox liturgies are long. At the very end, he's reading the sermon, and he's reading the sermon, and he's talking, and he's talking, and he's talking, and he's talking. People are getting antsy. He's talking, and then he just stops. Okay, I got to admit, I have no idea how to end this sermon, so I'm just going to end now. Because he's 20-something, 20 to 30 minutes, he's just talking. And he's just like, and you could tell he's kind of, he's searching for something. But there's still words coming out of his mouth. So it's got that, the microphone disease. Where you put the microphone in front of somebody and they just start blabbing and they spill everything because they just feel they got to say something. It's a microphone and they don't know how to control themselves.
Well, we're all guilty of that sometimes.
Scott, all right. Thank you for joining. Looking forward to seeing you in Moscow in less than a month now. I'll head up there too, for a day or two. So we'll see you at the economic in the economic forum. Okay. Thank you very much, and we'll see what Biden. We'll see what Trump does.
Yeah, we'll have an answer to the over under by then.
Yeah. Okay. We laugh, ladies and gentlemen, because otherwise we'd be crying.
So it's a very sad state of affairs.
It is. We're not taking this as pure humor, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, it's like I was a firefighter and I drove ambulances for about a decade here. And you come out of a tough fire and all you can do is sit down and tell bad jokes.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you become an alcoholic and you couldn't move. So humor is the best medicine sometimes. So,
yes, it is. So we always, that's how we all also got through the military, by being smart asses.
Okay.
Cheers, everyone.